Going to continue our journey through Scripture from cover to cover. Tonight we are in what we like to call colloquially the messy middle. Okay, so last week was botched beginnings. This week is messy middle. God is working during the messy middle. So that's all the way from the beginning of Exodus to the end of Malachi, the bulk of the Old Testament, this messy middle. God is at work. His plan is moving forward. But his people keep making really bad decisions. They keep doing the wrong thing. And so to help you remember that, to illustrate that, I've worn burnt orange tonight to just visually demonstrate to, yes, Mom, my mom is here. She went to UT. That's just for you. So don't hiss my mom. You can't do that. Okay, so tonight is a lot of bad news for the nation of Israel, but it's a lot of good news when we look at God, because even in a really dark part of Scripture, the messy middle of the Old Testament, God is still moving in powerful ways. And that's what we're going to look at tonight. We're going to see what God does, particularly through three covenants, one for each of the key chapters we'll look at tonight. So let's review for a moment. Let's make sure we're caught up on where we left off last week. So we've got some summaries up there on the board, if you guys can see them over there. And then I'll show you our diagram again that we've been working off of. We've got the whole Bible in 9 words: creation, revolt, promise. That was last week. Law, king, and hope. That's this week. And then Jesus, church, and shalom. That's next week. The whole Bible is ultimately pointing to Jesus. That's why he is not like the other titles up there. Jesus is the center of everything. So the Old Testament is pointing us towards him. The New Testament is pointing us back towards him and forward towards his return. So we have the whole Bible in 9 words. Last week we looked at creation, revolt, and promise, which we call this botched beginning because God started things off so absolutely wonderfully. So chapter number 1 we called creation. And in terms of the quantity of material, it's very short. It's 2 chapters, Genesis 1 and 2. That's all. During creation, that chapter of our story is about God's loving creation of humanity to bear his image and rule his world. And we talked at great length about what it means to be made in the image of God, that human life is different than all other life. Being made in the image of God means that we were designed with this unique ability to relate to God as his children, to reflect his character as we make moral choices like he does, and to radiate his glory. And because we're able to relate, reflect, and radiate, that's what qualifies us to rule, and that's the dominion mandate. God did not create you to go to heaven. He created you to rule his creation. Okay, so creation starts, and it is very good. God has created you to be his child and to rule his world, but sadly, the story doesn't end there. Because after just 2 chapters in Genesis, we entered chapter 2 called Revolt, where humanity chooses to sin. So revolt is about humanity's revolt against God's plan, which brings death in all its forms. And we talked about how humanity gave in to the root of all sin, which is pride, same sin that tripped up Satan, tripped up us. When human beings gave in to pride, they experienced death in every sense of that word. Hebrew death is much broader than the English word death. And so we had the entrance of shame and fear and blame. And we had the curse, cursed labor, cursed relationships, the entrance of physical death, and worst of all, the entrance of spiritual death. And so now human beings are born separated from God. We're born spiritually dead. We're born in need of redemption. And so it's incredibly bad news. But we camped for just a moment on just one half of one verse, chapter 3, verse 15, where God made a promise that there would be one male descendant of Eve who would crush our enemy Satan, but it would cost him his life. And that's the seed promise of the gospel, the first telling of the gospel in mystery form. They don't see it yet. We see it looking back at it. God promises to fix what we have broken. He does not give up on us. And so that promise to fix what we had broken, that takes us to chapter 3, which is called promise because it's about God's promise to a man named Abraham. God promises to restore humanity through the family of Abraham. And here we have a date. So we don't know how far back the other two are. We know that Abraham is around 2000 B.C. That's kind of a rough date if you want to just estimate. It's an easy one to remember. God makes these amazing promises to Abraham. He gives him land, seed, and blessing. And land, it's everything from the Nile River to the Euphrates. Seed, he's going to have children, and particularly a son through Sarah, his wife. And blessing, which is just like this really general word for God's good favor in your life. But the capstone of the whole promise and the essence of the blessing is when God tells Abraham, "And you, all the nations of the earth, shall be blessed." And so now we know it's not just going to be any male descendant of Eve who will bring redemption. It will be a child of Abraham. A male descendant of Abraham will be the one who brings redemption to the human race. So God takes these promises, and we read remarkable chapter 22, where Abraham exercises incredible obedience. And God, in response to that obedience, takes those covenant promises and swears on his own name to seal them as irrevocable. So from that moment forward, the Abrahamic covenant is absolutely irrevocable. And that's why it doesn't get taken away, because if you know where this story is headed, it's not headed in a good direction for Abraham's descendants. Yet they never lose the Abrahamic covenant. Why? Because God swore an oath on his own name. When God swears on his name, he's taking it up a notch. When he's swearing on his name, he's saying, doesn't matter what you do, this is about my reputation. I have now sworn upon my own glorious name that this will come true, and no one gets to besmirch my name. So it's going to be fulfilled. So the covenant is irrevocable. The rest of the Bible is going to show how God is going to fulfill that irrevocable covenant promise to Abraham. So that now becomes this thread, kind of going all the way through Scripture. How are these promises to Abraham and his family going to be fulfilled? So let's catch you up a little bit on a timeline, kind of where we are in the history of Israel. Again, you can just remember 2000 BC is plenty close enough. But for those of you who like precision, 2166, that's when Abraham was born. That's the beginning of what we call the age of the patriarchs. So it's Abraham, it's Isaac, it's Jacob, it's his 12 sons. And so we have this age of the patriarch. So Israel is not a nation at this point, it's a family. It's relatively small. This is the book of Genesis. So throughout Genesis, when we think of Israel, we're really talking about a clan. We're talking about the family of Abraham. At the end of this period of biblical history, there's going to be a famine at the end of Genesis in the promised land. And so God is going to send the family of Abraham, Jacob and his 12 sons, to Egypt. And they're going to begin to live in Egypt around 1876 BC is when they move down there. For the next 430 years, they will be in Egypt. And for the first part of that time period, things are good. They're actually given land. They're given freedom to continue to practice their religion, to continue to do what they want to do in life. But as that period comes to an end, they become slaves. It gets awful. And so that's where we're going to pick up things now, this week, with the messy middle. Let's go ahead and jump into the fourth chapter, Law. So Gabe, if you'll come on up, go ahead and turn to your handout. Actually, while he's coming up, I totally forgot to mention, on the middle of your table are note cards. I realize that it's too hard in a room this big to have Q&A, which saddens me because I really like to get questions and answer your questions. So what we'll do instead is you guys can write your questions on the note card about anything last week or this week. And then during table talk, when we take breaks for 10 minutes for you to talk at your tables, just come bring me your questions. If I'm taking a break back there, just come and put them on the pulpit here. And then I can look at them. I don't know how much time we'll have tonight. Hopefully we'll have enough that we can answer some of those questions. If we don't, we'll pick them up next week, or I'll cover them online on Facebook or something. So write out your questions and give them to me. Okay, let's pick it up with chapter 4, Law.
Deuteronomy 28, 1 through 6. That's where we're going to be starting. And if you faithfully obey the voice of the Lord your God, being careful to do all his commandments that I command you today, the Lord your God will set you high above all the nations of the earth. And all these blessings shall come upon you and overtake you, if you obey the voice of the Lord your God. Blessed shall you be in the city, and blessed shall you be in the field. Blessed shall be the fruit of your womb, and the fruit of your ground, and the fruit of your cattle, the increase of your herds, and the young of your flock. Blessed shall be your basket and your kneading bowl. Blessed shall you be when you come in, and blessed shall you be when you go out. Moving over to 15 through 19. But if you will not obey the voice of the Lord your God, or be careful to do all his commandments and his statutes that I command you today, then all these curses shall come upon you and overtake you. Cursed shall you be in the city, and cursed shall you be in the field. Cursed shall be your basket and your kneading bowl. Cursed shall be the fruit of your womb and the fruit of your ground, the increase of your herds and the young of your flock. Cursed shall you be when you come in, and cursed shall you be when you go out. Moving over to Deuteronomy 30, 15 through 20. See, I have set before you today life and good, death and evil. If you obey the commandments of the Lord your God that I command you today, by loving the Lord your God, by walking in his ways, and by keeping his commandments and his statutes and his rules, then you shall live and multiply. And the Lord your God will bless you in the land that you are entering to take possession of it. But if your heart turns away and you will not hear, but are drawn away to worship other gods and serve them, I declare to you today that you shall surely perish. You shall not live long in the land that you are going over the Jordan to enter and possess. I call heaven and earth to witness against you today that I have set before you life and death, blessing and curse. Therefore choose life, that you and your offspring may live, loving the Lord your God, obeying his voice and holding fast to him, for he is your life and length of days, that you may dwell in the land that the Lord swore to your fathers, to Abraham, to Isaac, and to Jacob, to give them.
Thank you, Gabe. All right, so the law. To understand what the law is about, we've got to talk about the Abrahamic covenant for one more minute. Got to think about the Abrahamic covenant as an incredibly good thing that had one deficiency. The Abrahamic covenant is an amazingly good promise. It's better than Abraham deserved, better than anyone deserved. And yet there was one major thing missing from it. And that's one of your blanks, first blank on your page. What's missing with the Abrahamic covenant? It did not give Israel a way to enjoy the blessings in their lifetime. Did not give them a way to enjoy the blessings in their lifetime. The Abrahamic covenant, we like to say, the Abrahamic covenant is an unconditional covenant. Now, when people hear the word unconditional, they think, wow, that sounds nice. No conditions. I get this nice covenant. How great is that? Well, it's not all great. Because since it's unconditional, that means there are no conditions, there are no rules for you to follow, there's no method for you to follow to get to enjoy all those promises in your lifetime. And that's what Abraham and his descendants experienced. So it is ironic. Abraham did not get any of the land. He was not a landowner. He was an alien in the land. His son Isaac did not get any of the land. Why? Because they were disobedient? No, because they had no way to access the promises of God that belonged to them. I like to think of it this way. You got an 8-year-old here, so 8-year-old child, and his parents put $1 million in the bank for him, but he's 8 years old. He has no way to access that money. It belongs to him legally. If you pull out a bank document for that $1 million, it has his name on it, but he's not old enough yet. There's nothing he can do to access that $1 million. It legally belongs to him, but he cannot enjoy it. That was Abraham's descendants. There was no method. There were no conditions for them to meet to be able to enjoy the Abrahamic covenant promises in their lifetime. That is why at the end of the book of Genesis, they're in Egypt, and at the beginning of the book of Exodus, they're slaves in Egypt. They were not slaves because of some sin they committed. There's nothing wrong that they had done that motivated God to make them slaves. It wasn't like that. It was through no fault of their own. They're slaves in Egypt because they don't yet have any way to access and enjoy the covenant promises that legally belong to them. That's what God fixes with the Mosaic covenant. A lot of times we tend to think about, or at least I used to think about, the Abrahamic covenant as all good, wonderful, great. Mosaic covenant, bad, 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 because it's laws and we disobey and we get cursed. It's not like that. Actually, the Mosaic covenant law is a great gift because it gives Israel what they were lacking. It tells them exactly what they need to do to be able to enjoy God's promises in their lifetime. So a little bit of the history of how this plays out. We are around 1500 BC is the rough date you can think of. 1446 is the exact date. God is going to send Moses to Egypt to deliver the Israelites. And if you've read Exodus, you know the story of 10 plagues. Moses leads them out of Egypt victoriously, and he takes them immediately to a mountain called Sinai. And at that mountain, Moses meets with God, and God declares this second covenant, the Mosaic covenant that we call the law. That's the same thing, Mosaic covenant and law, same thing. And this covenant is very different than the Abrahamic covenant. The Mosaic covenant, this law, it is the rules that God's people had to follow to enjoy Abrahamic covenant blessings in their lifetime. It's not a whole bunch of new promises. It is instead rules that tell you what you've got to do to enjoy the promises that already belong to you. Okay, so God gives Moses this wonderful law, and as a law, it is conditional. This is not like the Abrahamic covenant. It is conditional through and through, which is what we read from Deuteronomy 28. If you do what I told you, you get bless, 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 bless. If you don't do what I told you, you get curse, 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 curse. They exactly match up. So God is laying out all the conditions that are required for God's people to get to enjoy the Abrahamic covenant blessings in their lifetime. So a wonderful gift. The law is a great gift from God to Israel. They now know exactly what to do. They have a choice, if you will. They now have a choice every day for the rest of the Old Testament. They get to choose, will we obey the rules and enjoy the blessings, or will we disobey the rules and receive the curse? That's what it's about. So that choice frames the rest of the Old Testament. Now, it's really important at this point to just make sure we're all talking the same language and understanding what's happening here. The Mosaic law is not about heaven and hell. It never was. Remember what we said last week. Salvation is always by grace through faith. Grace through faith. That's true from Adam to whoever the last person born in the human race will be. It's always been motivated by grace, which means you get something good you don't deserve. You're not keeping the law. And it's always through faith, not through works. And the basis of salvation has always been the death of Jesus. It's never been human merit. It's never been good enough. It's the death of Jesus. In the Old Testament, God was looking forward because he stands above time. He's always in the present. So he saw Jesus dying and accredited that as righteousness to Abraham. When Abraham believed, he did the same for Moses. He did the same for David. For all the saints of the Old Testament, they were saved in exactly the same way you were, and it has nothing to do with the law. So the law wasn't about salvation, but now that David, for example, let's take a guy who lived in the middle of the Old Testament, now that he's saved through faith alone, how can he in his lifetime enjoy all of the wonderful promises made to Abraham? What did he have to do? Obey the law. Now, you notice he's a lot better off than Abraham or Jacob or Isaac were, right? Because he knows they didn't. He has the law. The ball is in his court, you can think it. From this point on, once they get the law, the ball's in their court. They get to decide whether or not they're going to obey or not. So the law is this great blessing that helps them to enjoy the Abrahamic covenant blessings in their lifetime, their generation. When we look at the law, we find that it is massive. There's hundreds of commands in it, and it regulates every single area of an Israelite's life. And so the law, it includes civil laws. You can think of the law of Moses as their constitution. It included criminal law. It included economic law. It included employment law. It included immigration law. It even included building codes, all kinds of different regulations for life. So Deuteronomy 24, here's an example. God says, "You shall not oppress a hired servant who is poor and needy, whether he is one of your countrymen or one of your aliens who is in your land and your towns. You shall give him his wages on his day before the sun sets." I mean, it spells out exactly how you are to employ people, how you're to give them their money, everything about your life. So civil law. Second, it includes ceremonial law. So the law of Moses tells Jews how to practice Judaism. This is where the religion of Judaism, when you think of Judaism, this is where it comes from. So it spells out their ceremonies and their practices and their rituals and their priests and their temple. And so here's an example, one of hundreds of laws about the religion of Judaism. Now, this is what you shall offer on the altar, 2 one-year-old lambs each day continuously. The one lamb you shall offer in the morning and the other lamb you shall offer at twilight. It spelled out exactly the sacrifices, when to offer them, how to take the animal, what kind of animal, how to cut the animal, how to offer the animal, what to sing and say when you're offering the animal. Everything spelled out. This is also, as God regulated what Judaism looks like, this is also where he included what we call the holiness laws, which to us are kind of odd. Here's an example of one. These you may eat, whatever is in the water, all that have fins and scales. But whatever is in the seas and in the rivers, it does not have fins and scales among all the teeming life of the water. They are detestable things to you. So shrimp, forbidden. Lobster, forbidden. Why? Why in the world would God care about whether you eat shrimp or not? Well, it's not about the shrimp. It's not about the lobster. It's about God forbidding certain things so that Israel would look unique to the rest of the world. God wants to set them apart. So he among the different regulations, they can't eat pigs. They can't wear fabric that is mixed. So a shirt of two different kinds of fabric is not allowed to wear. And look at what moral implications does that have? Well, none in and of itself. It's all about setting Israel apart as distinct from every other nation. So the rest of the world would look at Israel and say, there's something different about you. What's up with that? And all of a sudden, Israel gets to talk about God. So it's an evangelistic tool, if you will. It sets Israel apart as a kingdom of priests to be attractive to the world so the world would come and find out more about God. So we have all of these ceremonial laws. And then the most important part of the law is what we call the moral law. And it's summarized in the Ten Commandments. It tells Israelites how to behave towards God and towards other people. So just to summarize Ten Commandments, here's excerpts of it. You shall have no other gods before me. You shall not make for yourself an idol. You shall not take the name of the Lord your God in vain. Observe the Sabbath day to keep it holy. Honor your father and your mother. You shall not murder. You shall not commit adultery. You shall not steal. You shall not bear false witness against your neighbor. You shall not covet. The first table of the law, first half of it, is about how we act towards God, that we set him apart as the one true God. We honor the Sabbath as an opportunity to spend time with him. The second table of the law is about how we treat one another. Don't murder, don't steal, don't lie, don't covet. Okay, so the law regulated one's moral life. It told you how to behave. Now, as we're talking about the law, the most common question that comes up, people wonder, is the law still in effect for us today? Do you have to obey the law? Well, how many of you have ever, at any point in your life, eaten shrimp? Some of you really haven't? That's amazing to me. You're so missing out. Well, I hope it's not for like moral reasons, because you are not under that command anymore. We can eat shrimp. Why? Because we're not Israel. We're the church. We live after the death and resurrection of Jesus. And so we are not under the law. And I will explain how that has happened next week. So you got to come back. And I'll tell you how we got set free from the law through Jesus and through the new covenant. Israel was under the law, and it's enough for you to know right now that the law, with hundreds of commands that regulated every part of their lives, but that was a gift to tell them exactly how they could enjoy God's blessings in this life. Unfortunately, they chose to disobey the rules most of the time throughout the Old Testament. And what you learn from that, it's kind of a lesson in life, knowledge alone isn't enough. Knowledge won't get you there. They knew what to do, and they didn't do it. Why? Because they didn't want to. That's the problem with the law. It told them what to do, but it didn't give them the desire to do it. That's ultimately always the problem with the law. And God knew that that was going to be a problem for them. He actually tells us in Deuteronomy chapter 5, this is God himself speaking. Oh, that they had such a heart in them, that they would fear me and keep all my commandments always, that it may be well with them and with their sons forever. God is lamenting the fact, when he says heart, okay, so in the Old Testament, heart equals desire, that they had a heart in them, that they had the desire in them to obey, because it's not enough to know, you got to want to do the right thing. This is why education will never be the silver bullet people hope it will. It's a good thing, you need it, but it's not going to fix the problem that's at the root of the human race. It's not enough to know what to do. You got to want to do it. And the law didn't give you the heart, the desire to do it. And so for most of the history of the Old Testament, the reason we call it the messy middle is because now that they have this choice, obey or not, they choose not over and over again, most of the time. Not because they don't know the right thing, but because they don't want to do it. So that's the problem with the law. It doesn't give them the desire to obey. So as we end this chapter of the story, we now know more than we did before about this promised descendant of Eve. We knew from last week that he was going to be a descendant of Abraham also, but now we know that he's going to have to obey the law, because that's the only way to receive God's blessings. If he's going to receive God's blessings and share them with the world, he's got to perfectly obey. Okay, so now we're keeping our eyes open for a son of Abraham, an Israelite, who will perfectly obey. And that's where we end this chapter. So now let's take 10 minutes at your tables, and let's talk about these two questions. So I want you to spend about 5 minutes on each question. Like we did last week, if somebody at the table with a watch or a cell phone, we'll kind of monitor the time. And if you have questions for me, please write them on the note cards and bring them up during the break.